Hello, and welcome to Wagner Sports Talk. The date today is Friday, April 3rd, and today me and my brother will be talking about rising prospects in the MLB and what the next decade will look like for baseball. The Twitter account is Wagner Sports TLK, that's WagnerSports TLK, and you can email us with any questions at wagnersportstalk@gmail.com. So I'll give it up to my brother now. He's, as you wanted me to call him, my prospect guru. So here he is.
All right. So last year we went to the MLB Futures game, which is held on All-Star Weekend. And we were lucky enough that it was in our hometown of Cleveland. So we took the opportunity to go see a lot of these guys as they appeared in the SiriusXM All-Star Futures game. So the first guy I'm going to talk about is basically every prospect service has him ranked as the number one guy, and that's Wander Franco. Signed with the Rays in 2017 out of the Dominican. He's only, I think he's going to be in his age 19 season this year. He looks like he's going to be probably playing at AA some at the beginning of this year, might make it up to AAA, and potentially even to the professional team for the Rays to make some sort of run in late September and into October with the postseason when it traditionally would be. So that might be something more like December, depending on what the MLB does with their season this year. But so Wander Franco is a guy that he seems like, for his age, he's extremely consistent. He's got a really good swing path, misses very few pitches. Watching him in that game, he showed the ability that he'll probably be able to stay at shortstop. Fielding, he certainly won't be a defensive star, but his offense more than makes up for that. He could potentially move to second or short if whatever franchise he ends up coming up with, whether it's the Rays or he ends up moving elsewhere. If they have a better defensive shortstop, I could definitely see him moving. But really, his calling card is his tool as a hitter. Hitting for average, he's just phenomenal. And hitting for power, he's not far behind his hitting for average skill. Some sources say that he's an elite hitter, that this is like a once in a generational type hitting for average, expecting him to hit somewhere north of 320. In his two seasons that he's played in the Rays organization, he's hit over 330, which is just phenomenal for somebody that's playing against guys who are about 4 years older than him. So that's something that certainly can't be overlooked.
Do you think he will be able to do what Mike Trout did, have all this pressure against him and then come in and actually perform as well as he was expected in the MLB?
It's really hard seeing. I mean, I've seen people give him a 75 grade on that 80-20 prospect scale. So, I mean, 80 is guys, they're like Hall of Famers. I mean, that's, I don't think really they even ever give out an 80 grade to anyone. And he's got a 75 grade, which is just, that's a franchise cornerstone player. I mean, you're thinking Trout, you're thinking Yelich, you're thinking Verlander, you're thinking guys that are MVP contenders every year. So the expectations are extremely high. It's hard to say that anybody lives up to that expectation. Do I think Wander Franco will have a long, successful MLB career? Yes. Do I see him being a player that has something like 10 WAR seasons? I don't know that I see that. I see something like 4 or 5 WAR seasons, maybe a 10 WAR season in there, but I don't see something consistent. I think when we're going to look back on this, we're going to just realize that Mike Trout was something that the game will probably never see again.
For those who aren't baseball gurus, please tell them what WAR is.
So WAR is a statistic. It stands for wins above replacement. So the whole idea is basically a guy that you could get off the free agent market or somebody that would be in your minor league
league program is a replacement level player. So that WAR number is adjusting to how many more games does a team win based upon the contributions of that player over that replacement level player. So some of the best WAR seasons are 10, which are just extreme seasons. Those are seasons for the record books, some of the best seasons ever. An 8 WAR usually is about the level of an MVP. All-stars are going to be around a 4 to 6 WAR. So basically, that's just saying that somebody like Mike Trout, he adds 10 games to the Angels win-loss record. So that's a metric we'll talk about some as we go through talking about prospects and some guys that are already up in the majors, but will certainly be a force to be reckoned with in the future. I'm going to go to some other of the guys that are top prospects. And so I'm going to first go to the guy who was the number one pick in last year's 2019 MLB draft. So Adley Rutschman out of Oregon State.
I know you love this guy. Why are you so big on him?
So he's a switch hitting catcher, great backstop. I think he's got a high ceiling for a college guy. A lot of times when you think of college guys, you're saying somebody who's going to get quicker to the pros, but they don't have as high of a ceiling. However, I think with Adley Rutschman, you still have that. He's solid behind the plate, and his bat is really a plus-plus bat. I just think to see somebody like him behind the plate lead his team both calling games and also hitting for both average and power from both sides of the plate, it's something rare that you don't see. He was the consensus number one pick coming into that draft. Everybody knew the Orioles were taking Rutschman at one. It was just a matter of who was going to in that draft. There was a little doubt that he was the best prospect in that draft. He signed for a record-breaking $8.1 million signing bonus, so they don't just give money away. I mean, they give money to guys who have talent. You know the whole saying, shut up and put your money where your mouth is. That obviously happened with Adley Rutschman because the Orioles believe it's a player like him who can bring them out of this terrible state that they're in right now, to be frank. Some of these other guys that I'm going to talk about right now are guys who are on the verge of making it to the major leagues. We'll talk first about Luis Robert of the Chicago White Sox. Robert was signed in 2017 with the White Sox. He's actually already signed a long-term extension with the club despite not even playing a major league game yet. And like I said with the Orioles, when you see teams committing financially to these guys, you know that their scouting department believes in these guys.
Do you believe in long-term contracts? Like, let's say, like super contracts, even going out of a little bit of the prospects. Like, do you believe in super contracts, like what Giancarlo Stanton received, and players like him?
So my comment on that would be that the only time you should be giving any contract, I would say even over like 7 years, is when you are retaining a guy. So it shouldn't be a signing, rather a re-signing, because you know that player, he's been somebody that's been in your organization. I just think to commit to somebody financially for $30 million a year and not know their everyday life, that's just a huge commitment that if it was my money, I wouldn't be comfortable making. Luis Robert, they've obviously invested a lot of money in him, so he's going to get a chance to play in the majors. You don't sign a guy who's still a prospect to a big deal like that without giving him more than a fair chance at making an impact on your major league ball club. The next guy I'm going to talk about is Joe Adell.
Has he played any major league games yet?
So no, Joe Adell has not made his major league debut yet. He struggled a little bit late last season in AAA, only hitting .264. But in 43 games at AA last year, he was able to hit .308. His career average is just a little bit south of .300. So he's a guy that can hit once again. He's got very good speed. He's got a great arm, good defender. He'll be playing right field with the Angels because he's got a great arm. Maybe not as much range as you would like, but the Angels have no need for that, signing Mike Trout to a mega deal. Mike Trout's going to be roaming center field for the foreseeable future. So Joe Adell fits nice into their lineup. He's somebody that will definitely make an impact on them this season. The Angels are a really interesting team because they have, in my opinion, two guys that are the best baseball players that will probably ever walk on this planet. You got Mike Trout, as I talked about earlier, who's the number one player. I think there's little doubt about it. He just can do basically whatever he wants when he's on the baseball field. I mean, you look at him and he's able to steal bases. He's able to hit home runs. He's able to basically do anything from the batter's box he wants. I mean, you hear guys talk about, oh, we'll pitch him low, pitch him high. He hits everything. There's no good way to pitch Mike Trout other than walking him. He's just a phenomenal talent that we probably won't see the likes of for a very long time. And then
I know who you're going to say next. I think that the ceiling for this guy is super high, but we don't have a full slate of him yet. Tell him who you're going to say.
So Shohei Ohtani. I mean, this guy is just a freak of nature. He's come over from Japan, left Japan early, actually, to sign in the United States for much less than he could have got if he would have stayed in Japan for 2 years longer. If he had come over at the beginning of this year, he'd be able to make much, much, much more money. But so he decided, since he's just an extreme competitor, that he wanted to come to the U.S., prove that he's one of the best baseball players on the planet. He's able to do things like his time to first base is faster than Trey Turner, one of the fastest guys in the game. Trey Turner probably has a 75-80 speed grade or run grade. You look at, he hits the ball harder than Bryce Harper. Bryce Harper is a guy who probably has at least a 70 power stat. And he throws a fastball harder than Strasburg, harder than a lot of guys in the league that have around a 70 fastball grade.
Just know that we're going off the 20 to 80 scale.
So if you're looking at a guy who is considered a perennial all-star on both sides of the ball, that's something that, sure, we haven't seen a huge sample size from him, but he's more than shown in his limited action that he's able to do it on both sides of the ball. I mean, he was able to hit home runs in a bunch of his games early on, and he was able to rack up a significant strikeout rate. And that's all while both hitting and pitching, not even focusing on one. And it just shows you, I think, his competitive nature, just seeing how he mightily struggled. I mean, he had one of the worst spring trainings ever. I mean, he couldn't do anything in spring training. I mean, guys were just able to throw the ball right past him, throw some high velocity, and Shohei Ohtani wasn't going to hit it. Now, that's not the case. Now he's catching up to those 95-plus mile-an-hour fastballs, turning them around, doing some damage to those pitches. So I think he's a guy that I think he might be the most valuable player in baseball because he literally can do everything. I mean, he can hit for power, he can get on base, he can run, and he can come throw. He can pitch too, which is just something that isn't part of baseball really right now at this point.
I just want to see if he'll be able to hold up being able to play both. Because we saw Babe Ruth could both pitch and hit. Maybe not to the level of pitching of Shohei Ohtani, but I wonder if he'll be able to keep it up over his tenure in the MLB.
I think it'll be definitely something. The Angels are doing a tremendous job of, they're tracking everything he does. I mean, they're tracking everything from his sleep schedule to is he, or pitchers thrown over when he's on base, and is he diving back into the base, or is it a stand up back to a base, just to really track his workload. So obviously the Angels are completely invested in him because they know he's a once in a generation athlete. There aren't many guys like him on the planet, let alone in the sport of baseball. So they're going to make sure that they get the best out of him. And that's why they're going to this once a week pitching rotation, and they're giving him a day off before and after he pitches and hitting. The next guy I'm going to talk about has made his major league debut, and that's Gavin Lux. He played some in October as a second baseman for the Los Angeles Dodgers. Second base is where I see him playing for the short term, at least, because of Corey Seager taking that spot at short, and the rest of the Dodgers infield is filled, and it's filled extremely well. I mean, you have Muncy at first base, and you have Seager at short, and you have Turner at third. This team just seems, they just are unfair. I mean, they got the money to go basically get anybody they want. That's how they were able to get Mookie Betts, because they were able to take on some of David Price's contract that the Red Sox didn't want. And so it just leads to them having an embarrassment of riches. And their next guy that you're going to say, where'd he come from, is Gavin Lux. He was a 2016 first-round pick out of Wisconsin. Obviously not a strong baseball state, but, you know, that means they did their due diligence that they would go pick a guy that high. He doesn't have as high of a ceiling as some of the guys that we've previously talked about, but he's going to be in the lineup on a regular basis. He's going to hit around 260, 270, going to be a solid contributor for many years. I wouldn't be surprised if you told me that he isn't, when we come back and look at this list, that he hasn't put together the highest WAR in a career or that sort of thing. But he ranks higher in a lot of these prospect lists due to the certainty that he's already played in the major leagues, and there's relatively low variance in terms of what he is.
Is he going to be starting for sure, or is it still up in the air if he'll start this year?
I'm almost certain that he'll be starting on a fairly regular basis. Part of the Dodgers' strength over the years, though, it has been they've been so deep. I mean, that they can have somebody like this year, they're going to still have Jock Peterson sitting on the bench. Because you got Pollock, you got Bellinger, you got Betts.
Who's playing second base for them Lux isn't up?
So the other guy would be Kike Hernandez, would be playing second base for them. A utility player. He's serviceable, but I don't think he shows that same potential for output as Lux does. The next guy I'm going to go to is Jesus Luzardo. Threw in 6 major league games last year, actually tallied 2 saves in 12 innings out of the bullpen. He's going to come back as a starter. He's a left-hander they got actually from the Nationals in a trade that dealt Doolittle to the Nationals. The A's they're always looking for trades. I mean, whether it's they're moving prospects or they're picking up prospects, they're always moving guys around, and I think it's something that is rather interesting to look at, because there's a lot of times they're swinging a lot on these trades. I mean, sometimes they miss big, sometimes they hit big. I think this is one where they hit big. I mean, Sean Doolittle's a guy who, he's a great reliever, but if you can get a guy like Jesus Luzardo, who's a top of the rotation piece, that's a trade you're going to make all day.
And I feel like that was also a great trade for both teams, because, I mean, now the A's, you have a young, solid prospect in Luzardo, but then also as the Nationals, you're getting a bullpen arm, which is really what you needed.
Yeah, in that time. I mean, anytime you make a trade and that piece helps you win the World Series, it's a good trade. Now, could you have gotten a guy for less? Maybe, but winning a World Series is the ultimate prize in this. I mean, Sure, it's cool to have some prospects, but guess what? Everybody's playing for a World Series ring, and prospects don't win World Series rings, ever. The next guy we're going to talk about a little bit is Hunter Green. He was a two-way prospect out of high school. Everybody expected that he was probably going to give up the bat, that he would just be a good hitting pitcher, that he wasn't going to continue to be a batter, especially being drafted by an NL team. That would mean he'd have to play the field. He might pinch hit every once in a while, depending on how his batting development goes. But he caught a lot of eyes when he was able to light up radar guns to the tune of triple digits as a high school senior. He was the second pick of the Cincinnati Reds. But he's had some arm issues, having Tommy John surgery. He didn't play all of the 2019 season, and I think he might even be out a little bit of the 2020 season. And so with a hard thrower like that, it's difficult to judge. You always got to be looking at their mechanics and seeing, is this something that can last? And sometimes looking at their mechanics doesn't even really necessarily tell you, because you see a guy like Chris Sale and everybody thinks, oh, well, he should have had Tommy John surgery so many years ago. How did he pitch for so long? And then this year it pops up that he has to have Tommy John surgery. So it's just something you don't really know. It's something that the Reds will definitely keep an eye on in his development, though.
I think that it's crazy that we have guys like Zach Greinke who are throwing, what, 89 to 91 mile-an-hour fastballs on an average. And then we're still deciding to base our pitching prospects on what it says on the radar gun. That's why I think that some teams may have looked to take Hunter Green too early for that being the main reason.
Yeah, I completely agree. You got to look at the makeup of guys. Sure, velocity can cover some errors, but if they're too wild, there's stories of all sorts of guys who, I mean, a guy I think about is Riley Pint. He's a Rockies prospect. I think he's dropped, some people even have him outside the top 30 in their organization after being a first-round pick in 2016. He was another guy, threw 100 in high school, caught a lot of eyes by doing that, but he really hasn't been able to break out of single A because he just can't find the strike zone. And so not being able to do that, you're lucky if you can be a reliever, and because you're certainly not going to be a starter with control problems. And if you can't get guys out, whether it's because you're walking them or because you're giving up hits to them, nobody really cares. You aren't going to get moved along. And so he's sort of missed the boat. Still being in single A is disappointing for a guy that was drafted. He's had now 3 seasons to develop. So the next guy I'm going to talk about is another two-way star that came out of that same draft, I believe, in Brendan McKay. Brendan McKay is from Louisville, 3-year college player, and there was some talk whether he was going to be a pitcher or a hitter. He ended up making his major league debut last year on the mound. With this new 26-player roster where there's the whole you can only carry 13 pitchers, I think you will see him have some at-bats so that he can be considered a two-way player. They're calling it the Shohei Ohtani rule. I think you'll see Brendan McKay trying to make that minimum number of at-bats so they can use him as somebody who fits inside that loophole.
So how will that work? I don't quite understand the rule. So is it you have 13 pitchers and then a two-way player doesn't count
so
as a pitcher?
A two-way player would be towards like the batter allotment. It doesn't count against your pitcher total.
Okay.
So that would allow the Rays to carry another pitcher. And I'm sure many of you know that the Rays are always looking to create some sort of competitive advantage. I mean, it's phenomenal what they've been able to do to be one of the lowest payrolls every year, them in Oakland, and be able to make the playoffs on a rather consistent basis, much more often than a lot of teams that are using a lot more capital than they are. The next guy I'm going to talk about is a guy who actually went behind Hunter Green in the 2017 draft, but has surpassed him in terms of development, and that's Mackenzie Gore. A left-handed pitcher out of North Carolina. He's in the Padres system. Mackenzie Gore put up just video game stats in high school. He's had some good outings and some not-so-great performances in the minor leagues. Last year, he pitched a lot of the season in high A ball, where he only had a 102 ERA. However, in double A, in five appearances, he had a 415 ERA. So that's a little alarming, but it's a five-game sample size. You get roughed up in one game, and that can easily put your ERA way out of whack. So I think he'll perform in double A and maybe even get a little taste of triple A this year, but I think they're gonna kind of just step him up year by year and make sure that he's developed into a top of the rotation piece rather than rushing him to the major leagues and potentially not getting the most out of him.
Yeah, I've been big on this guy ever since he was since he was drafted. And I think it's mostly just because of the movement he's got on his pitches. Throws some great pitches, and I think he'll be able to be a solid piece in the future.
So the next guy that we're going to talk about is Nate Pearson from Blue Jays. He's a junior college prospect, another pitcher out of that 2017 draft. Seems like that might be a draft where we're talking about some of these great pitchers out of there for years to come. But Pearson really runs the fastball up there. Some have it graded as an 80. Obviously, on that 20-80 scale, that's all the better you can get. And that's an 80 fastball is something that you don't see very often. And so, obviously, he runs it up there at 100. But the fastball's also got some deceptive late movement. It isn't just a straight fastball. So I think that's obviously his go-to pitch. He's got a pretty good slider, a serviceable changeup, a curveball that he's working to develop. But really, in today's day and age, if you got a fastball that moves a little, you don't need more than three pitches. He'll probably begin this year in AAA. It's where he ended last year, only got three games there. But I see him making it up to the major league level with Toronto, being part of that future wave with Guerrero and Bichette and Biggio. So the next guy I'm going to talk about is somebody who's ranked a little lower, but we'll get to see a taste of the MLB this year, and that's going to be Nick Madrigal. He's a second baseman for the White Sox. He's a guy who was on a team with Adley Rutschman out at Oregon State. They were 2018 College World Series champions, and Madrigal is a guy that he just hits. I mean, I've seen some places where he's got a 70 hit grade. I mean, I could see him being a guy that hits 300 every year. So far in his career in the minor leagues, he's hit 309. Last year, he hit about 340 between AA and AAA. I mean, to be able to hit north of 330, I mean, that means basically every game you're getting a hit or two. So I just think he's been overlooked because he doesn't have the same pop that a lot of these top prospects do. But as a second baseman, most second basemen don't hit for great power. So I think he's somebody that is going to be a very serviceable player in the future.
I just find it crazy that he is the fourth-ranked prospect on the White Sox.
Well, so part of that is because you got Luis Robert, who's, I would say, probably closer to the pros because Madrigal might start this year down in AAA. And then you got a guy like Michael Kopech, who he's still a great arm, a little bit of prospect fatigue there. He came over in that Chris Sale deal, but I think he's got the potential of being a two guy behind Giolito in their rotation.
So now we're going to be talking about the future of this decade, 2020. So we're just going to go by each position, who we think will be the best player at that position for the decade. And so you can start off with catcher.
So obviously there'll probably, we're not going to make all these right picks. I mean, there will be guys who will be drafted in this year's draft. It'll make it to the MLB and it'll have five great years, and people might say, well, they're the best player of the decade. But we're going to go based on what we have now. And so looking at the catcher position, I love Adley Rutschman. I mean, we talked about him early on in this episode, and it's a rare skill, and I think that Adley Rutschman is going to be the player. If the Orioles got any chance of turning around their franchise, it's going to be because Adley Rutschman is a Hall of Fame caliber player. I'm fairly confident he'll be a perennial All-Star. He's got an extremely high floor, and still a very high ceiling. I mean, in college, he was able to hit 411 and be on base 57% of the time. That's like he's on base every time he goes in the batter's box.
Yeah, I just find that crazy. A crazy stat. And I just think that that's insane that you can hit that well and get on base that much. But we're going to have to end it a little short today. We're wishing to go through all the spots. But we've got some really interesting episodes coming out. We're going to be ranking the best MLB player. We're gonna go through a whole bracket and decide who's the best MLB player. And so that's all we got for you guys today. I hope you enjoyed the podcast. Thank you for listening.